Hi, this is the Charles Henry Stewart Show. My guest today is Amber Davies from the New Day Maya Pain Center and co-author of the Trigger Point Therapy Workbook. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Charles. I'm excited to be here.
Your book focuses on the role of trigger points in pain and dysfunction. What exactly is a trigger point?
A trigger point is basically a highly irritable, grumpy little knot in skeletal muscle that causes pain and dysfunction, often referred pain somewhere else.
Okay, how does a trigger point form in the first place?
Well, a trigger point is a naturally occurring phenomenon that happens at the neuromuscular junction of a skeletal muscle. So what that means is where the motor nerve is coming into the muscle to tell the muscle to do its job, that area, that spot, is getting too much of the chemicals that tell the muscle to contract.
Okay.
And it gets into a feedback loop that maintains that knot, self-sustaining. And that knot will continue. So it's, you know, technically not like if you were to take a string and tie a knot in it, it's not like that. It's more that the sarcomeres, the smallest unit of contracture in a muscle, are staying contracted all the time because the nerve is chemically telling the muscle with acetylcholine to stay contracted. And then that that trigger point continues to send a message back to the nervous system that says, basically, help, help, I'm using up all my energy. I'm working really, really hard, and I need more. So the nervous system, the brain, sends more, which is more acetylcholine, to keep the muscle contracted. Now, that's the simple version. There's a much longer, complicated scientific explanation that is in a shortened version in our book, but there's a lot more to it.
Well, I see. So it's a self-fulfilling thing, and it won't necessarily heal on its own.
Well, it can, and they often do if you stop using the muscle long enough. But, you know, for example, you know, most of our muscles we're using regularly, so. Say, for example, you move and you're lifting, you know, hundreds of boxes and carrying heavy things. You know, your muscles get tired, and we're all familiar with that feeling of tired, sore muscles. And then sometimes we get new pain from it. Like let's say the biceps in the front of the arm. We might have pain in the front of the elbow or pain in the shoulder from trigger points in the middle of the bicep muscle. So, you know, maybe by the end of the day, we might, at the front of our elbow might be tired and sore, but it'll go away in 2 or 3 days, maybe even one day. The body wants to take care of itself, wants to fix that, you know, the metabolism and straighten things out. And because it needs to do that, it'll send a pain message. So you'll have pain when you contract and use your biceps. So that tells you, hey, relax this, lay off of it, don't lift another 100 boxes today. And so the body has a chance to, you know, regulate and come back to homeostasis. And then the body will take care of that. That trigger point will go back from being actively causing pain in the front of the elbow to maybe latent. Maybe you'd still be able to feel the little spot of pain in the middle of the biceps where the trigger point happens, but you'd no longer have the symptom of referred pain at the elbow. Well, you know, if you relax that long enough or don't overuse it, then the body can work through it. But oftentimes what we see is in my practice, I see people who are, you know, adults and have been using their bodies for decades and decades and often have a lifelong kind of accumulation of trigger points in muscles that they have used continually or without enough treatment directly to the trigger point.
Right, I see. And how is it that trigger points cause pain?
I don't know that we fully understand that yet. It's a really exciting time to be in this field. There's not enough research into the muscular causes of pain, and we're still learning a lot. I have to say, I don't know what has happened in the last year as far as research into the why the trigger point is causing pain and its relationship with the nervous system. the chemical reasons. I can't explain to you in scientific terms why the trigger point, how it makes its referred pain. We know that the referred pain happens in predictable patterns, that the trigger points happen in predictable places on everybody's body. So on everybody's body, like in the upper trapezius, there are three trigger points, and I could walk up and pinch the trigger point on you, and it would be in just about exactly the same place, you know, within a couple of millimeters on everybody. When the trigger point is present. So it'll be tender to the touch. It may refer its pain pattern or a sensation while you're pressing on the trigger point. Or it could, after pressing and massaging it, it could relieve symptoms like a headache after the massage. But they happen in the same places on everybody.
Right. So are there some places where it's very, very common to get trigger points?
Yes, like some areas of the body.
Yeah.
Well, the trapezius is a great example because we all, because we're on 2 feet and we use our arms out in front of us for our work, most of us as human beings. So our trapezius helps to carry the weight of our arms as they hang down and as they work out in front of us. So everybody has trigger points in the trapezius. Everybody enjoys a shoulder massage, for example. And people who have active trigger points will get headaches from that, neck pain, back of the neck pain specifically, and then that will lead to more headache. So we all have trigger points in the trapezius. We all enjoy treatment there from time to time. Sometimes people need it every day, just depending on their work. We often get trigger points in our gluteal muscles and of the hips, the gluteus medius and minimus muscles. They cause low back pain and pain in the buttocks and pain down the legs. Those are really common. A lot of upper back muscles, the rhomboids, the middle and lower trapezius, because, again, we work oftentimes with our hands out in front of us. So we get a lot of symptoms in the upper back, neck. And then what's really interesting, sorry, somebody's mowing the grass out. Out my window right in front of me. I hope it's not too loud.
No.
I'll wait for him to pass a minute. So for example, I'll move my thing here. So if I work here with my arms forward and protracted and I'm slumped over my computer, my pec muscles get short and tight. And then I go and I stand and I walk around and my pec muscles are still short and tight. Well, my back doesn't like that. My rhomboids, my trapezius are constantly on a stretch. So what's interesting is my pec muscles aren't going to have a pain pattern necessarily. I may not get pain in the front of the shoulder or the inner elbow or down the arm and hand from the pectoralis major and minor. What's going to happen from these short, tight muscles is I'm going to get pain in the back, pain in the rhomboids between the shoulder blades, and pain in the neck from this dysfunctional posture. So with trigger points, you've got the referred pain patterns to think about and also the mechanical dysfunction, the levers and pulleys. What's tight? What's making the other side stretch too far? And sometimes you'll get trigger points in the overstretched muscles, but not the short, tight muscles. Or more importantly, active trigger points. An active trigger point is a trigger point that's actively causing symptoms right now, actively causing pain. So for me, I have trigger points in my pectoralis major and minor because I massage people and I work in front of me all the time. But I don't have any pain here in the front of the shoulders. But if I massage here, I'll find little tender, painful spots, little owie spots, little trigger points. And I need to massage them and the whole muscle, stretch out the fascia, and do a bigger stretch of the muscle to get it back into balance so my upper back muscles aren't constantly on a stretch.
And do you think maybe the reason that we get trigger points is because we use our bodies in ways that it wasn't really intended to be used?
Sure. So how many hours a day do you spend on the computer, for example?
We aren't
made to do that, but we're going to do it anyway. Mm. So, I mean, it's kind of an Olympic sport. Many people spend 8 hours at their job sitting at a computer, sitting, one, not so great for you, and at a computer, not very good at all, and then spend, what, another 2 hours at home surfing the web and checking email and buying stuff. You know, our bodies aren't made to do that. Our bodies are made to move and contract and stretch.
So do you know if in natural populations, whether they get trigger points to a lesser extent in kind of pre-industrial societies?
Unknown. I would assume that all human bodies get trigger points for various reasons of overuse, repetitive strain, injuries, accidents, illnesses. All of those reasons can cause trigger points. It would just kind of depend on how you use your body. I'd love to know. I'd love to go hang out with more, for lack of a better word, primitive societies and study their health issues and musculoskeletal health and how they resolve them and how they avoid problems.
Yeah. Do you know if animals get trigger points at all?
There is some information about dogs and dogs having trigger points. Actually, one of the studies, the original studies about trigger points is from a biopsied muscle of a dog many, many decades ago. And that's in our book, in the second and third editions, I think, the Trigger Point Therapy Workbook. So yes, there's evidence that dogs get trigger points. How much study has been done, I don't know. I know that there is a class that people can take to treat dogs through, I think that's through myopainseminars.com. Jan Dommerholt teaches a course on how to treat dogs. So I don't know if you can see that very well or not, but that's the photograph. So this is some of the... Yeah, so this is some of the early evidence of a trigger point in skeletal muscle, and this is from the gracilis muscle of a dog.
Right.
This was many, many decades ago. We now have much better research. We can actually see trigger points now on color Doppler ultrasound, which is really great, but we don't yet have they're working on the capacity to use that technology in doctors' offices. Right now it's only available in research settings because it's a very expensive machine. It's like my understanding is it's a $100,000 machine that cardiologists use to take a look at the heart. Now, you know, this is not my field, so I'm sure there's much more to it than that, and there may be new information now, but they're working on that to have use for it in a clinical setting.
So there might be scanners that can just see from the outside where all of your trigger points are in your body.
That's where we're going. Mm-hmm. That's where we're going. More of an ultrasound rather than a scanner, not like an MRI to take a whole big picture look. And also, you know, you wouldn't want to take a pill, for example, and get rid of all of your trigger points. There may be muscles that are splinting and working really hard and staying contracted to help support weakness in other supportive structures like ligaments. If your vertebra is not in balance, you know, your muscles are going to help take over and help support that. So, yeah, I wouldn't want to take it, you know, take a pill to get rid of all of the trigger points. It's too broad a wide shot.
I see, and because we don't fully understand why they form, and we don't know that they couldn't have beneficial.
Well, they certainly have benefits. They certainly have benefits in that they tell us to. It's a message. The pain is a message. You're doing too much. I'm out of balance. This is dysfunctional. Cut it out. Listen to your body.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we can override.
So if I go to the gym and become sore over the next few days, would they be said to be trigger points, the muscle soreness?
No, the delayed muscle, delayed onset muscle soreness is, from working out, for example, is a different process. That's a completely different process than a trigger point. Now, you can get trigger points from working out. You would benefit from massaging your trigger points and massaging your muscles before and after a workout. But delayed onset muscle soreness is not the same thing as trigger points or trigger point referred pain.
How long can trigger points last? What's the longest you've seen someone suffer with trigger points and then have them relieved very quickly?
Trigger points can last your whole life. One of the most interesting cases I've seen, I met a woman at the first class that Dad and I taught together in 2001, and this woman had a frozen shoulder, and she had no pain, but she could not move her arm above 90 degrees. She couldn't go into upward rotation at all, and she didn't push her arm anymore. She was a massage therapist, and she was just coming for the continuing education. She wasn't particularly interested in the topic, but we found trigger points in all, 22 muscles of her shoulder, and they were severe. They were very sore when we pressed on them with light pressure, and I said, I think you should massage your shoulder muscles. We were teaching self-applied massage, and I said, can't hurt you. Maybe you'll get some range of motion back. And she gave me a call about 3 months later. She'd been doing self-treatment on her shoulder, and she'd been receiving massage from a friend. And she had almost complete range of motion back. She was having a little bit of a struggle with a couple of muscles and wanted to make sure they were treating them properly. But she had almost full range and could do whatever she wanted to with her arm pain-free. So that was amazing to me. That was very exciting.
Is that typical? Do you see a lot of pain that people kind of write off as aging or as untreatable, which they then find trigger points and the pain can go away?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I do in my own life when a pain pops up, something new or an injury, I say to myself, okay, what's the role of myofascial pain in this? What is the role of trigger points? Is there anything that I know that I can do to help make this better now? And I go and figure it out and work whatever trigger points. And I'm always amazed at how much is muscular. I see that over and over and over in my patients that I treat, that you think something's arthritis. Your doctor thinks it's arthritis. This is typical. You go to the doctor with pain, and they say, well, what do you expect? You're 55. You're getting old. You're going to have a little elbow pain. You're going to have a little knee pain. And they write it off as arthritis, but they don't image it. They don't know for sure. And so they call it arthritis. And the only problem with that is that you stop thinking about it. You think, it's permanent, and you can't do anything about it. And then even when there is arthritis present, we don't know how much of the arthritis, how much of the pain is from the arthritis and how much of it is from the muscle. I mean, what if 70% of the pain you feel is from referred pain from muscle? That's huge.
I saw on your website it has the figure that as much as 75% of pain could be myofascial trigger point pain.
Yeah, and that statistic comes from Janet Trevell, the pioneer of trigger point therapy. She was a cardiologist and pharmacologist and spent decades studying myofascial pain and then became John F. Kennedy's, our president, four decades ago, became the first female White House physician in his administration because her work with him was so profound that he said, I need to have this woman right here with me. So that was her quote, that 75% of common pain is muscular in origin or has a muscular component. So that's huge. Huge. And even when there's a genuine visceral problem in your gut, you have kidney dysfunction or cancer growing. Obviously those things can kill you, so you take medical approach, you go to the doctor, you get the treatment that you need. But part of that pain that disease causes triggers trigger points in muscles, and then you have more pain from the muscles. I often wonder what it would be like if nurses were able to do massage again. Here in the United States, the nurses used to do massage in as part of treatment, and now they're, you know, too overwhelmed and busy. But I often wonder the benefit that patients could have from massage of their trigger points while they are waiting for appropriate treatment or while they're coping with their symptoms. I know my mother died of cancer back in 2009, and you know, she was terminal. But along that journey, even the day before she died, I gave her massage that helped her be more comfortable in her body and get through the days with more ease. And it was invaluable. It was invaluable.
Do you think allopathic medicine undervalues trigger points? I know that I've had headaches for a lot of my life, and whenever I went to the doctor, I would get prescribed some kind of drug, and there was never really a mention of myofascial pain.
Right, that's typical. No, the doctors are not aware, for the most part, the general broad statement, doctors are not aware of myofascial pain and its full broad spectrum. They've, you know, there's this diagnosis of chronic myofascial pain syndrome or regional pain syndrome, different things. And sometimes they'll have somebody who's, you know, has fibromyalgia or has extreme chronic pain, and they say, oh gosh, maybe this is chronic myofascial pain, but they have very little understanding of what that is and how to recognize it and how to treat it. So, and I look at it like this: the allopathic Western medicine paradigm has spent a lot of time trying to solve problems that could kill us, and muscle pain can't kill us.
Yeah.
So there's that, and there's the reality that muscle is an orphan organ. No medical specialty claims it as its primary concern. So that means that there is no group of people in a university setting that gets together day after day after day and tries to ask the questions of and solve the problems of and get research for the muscular causes of pain. You've got people scattered throughout the world who are from different disciplines who are you know, deeply interested in muscle and the muscular causes of pain, but they don't, you know, they used to get together at conferences and now they get together on the internet, so change is happening faster. But you can't go learn to be a doctor of muscle. Now, you could be a rheumatologist, you could be a physical medicine doctor, a physiologist. That's not the right word. Physiologist? That's not the word. What am I trying to say? Physiatrist. A physiatrist. And muscle and orthopedic. And muscle is under their umbrella. But they're not obsessed with the causes, but the muscular causes of pain, like the orthopedics. You know, they're amazing with bone and ligament and the structures, but they're not concerned with muscle. So it's a missing piece. I often like to remind people that I think this field of studying muscle and fascia is in its adolescence. We know a lot, you know. I mean, a kid in there who's 15, 16 years old knows a whole lot about survival, knows a lot about the world. But there's a lot more that we don't know, and most of what, like, I know and how to treat muscle pain and how to recognize muscle pain is not known in Western medicine, widely in the mainstream.
I've heard the term fascia a lot, but I don't fully understand what it is. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. It's kind of funny to talk about muscle without talking about fascia. Fascia is like the shrink wrap that surrounds the muscle. And we've all seen this. If you've ever dealt with a cut up a chicken, like if you're cooking chicken on the bone, or you're cutting up a whole chicken, you're peeling these pieces off. Or if you take off the fat, sometimes you find these thin membranous layers of stuff. You know, it's kind of a sheet of stuff, and you pull it apart, and that's fascia. So fascia covers the whole muscle. Let me get down with it. Covers the whole, you know, under the skin, covers the fat, encapsulates it, then covers, you know, bags of muscles to hold and support them together and help create strength. And then individual muscles. And then within the muscle itself, the, you know, little, you know, sections and fibers and then fibrils. So the fascia is the strength. It also helps to communicate. So one of the things that we've recently learned about fascia is that it relates to proprioception. So proprioception is the knowledge of where my hand is back here. Or if I were to scratch myself on the back of the head, that, you know, or here, you know, I know where I am according to my nervous system. And it's only been, you know, a decade or two since the modern medicine has begun to study fascia. Previously, when they studied cadavers, because that's how we know about the human body, is to study the bodies of people who've passed on. So, you know, we can cut people open and we can go, golly, this lung is black. I wonder why this person's lung is so black and fibrous and disgusting. Oh, they were a smoker. Gosh, I wonder if they're related. You know, it's obvious. We can see correlations. Well, in the past, the fascia was, you know, it's connective tissue, and they didn't think it was important, and so literally they would take it off and throw it in the bucket, and they didn't understand its function because they're dealing with somebody that's dead. It's not doing anything. The fascia has to be living for it to show its function. And the same with muscle. You can't study the pathology of muscle on somebody who's dead because of rigor mortis. The sarcomeres, the smallest unit of contracture, contracts with rigor mortis. No? That's it. That's what muscle does. It contracts and it shortens.
So is that so like the whole body becomes a huge trigger point almost?
Say it again?
Is that like all of the muscles in the body become entirely trigger point-ish?
Yeah. They're just staying, they're tight. They're contracted. They're rigid. Yeah, and so a trigger point, as we talked about, is a spot in the muscle that's staying contracted all the time.
Hmm. Okay, so, and the role of fascia is proprioception, primarily.
One of the roles, and strengthening, grouping things together. A muscle can't fully lengthen when its fascia, when its surrounding fascia is tight and being bound tight. The muscle can't fully stretch. So it works together. And my point is that we've just begun to study fascia. So there are some really wonderful books about fascia. There's I don't think it's an annual conference. There's a conference on fascia every couple of years, where researchers and clinicians are getting together and talking about the role of fascia. But the medical community hasn't, you know, just does, you know, concerns lives and fixing people that they can diagnose and see the problems with through the diagnostic testing we have right now. And we're still learning about muscle and fascia and how to diagnose those problems.
Right. So if a patient comes to you with pain, to what extent is your job about finding trigger points and then treating them, and what are the complications involved in that process?
Well, you know, I came into my work as a massage therapist with an intensive study of trigger points. And so when I'm concerned with treating muscle, I've always looked for trigger points. And along the way, I have learned a lot. And, you know, as hard as I want to believe that it's simple and it's, you know, just got to find the right spot to press on, it's not. The body is complicated. You know, the system of levers and pulleys is complicated. So when somebody comes to me with shoulder pain, for example, they have shoulder pain down the arm, they may have limited range of motion, I am not only looking for trigger points that will soften the muscle and allow the muscle to move, to stretch, to contract more fully. I'm looking for trigger points that will relieve pain. But I'm also looking to unlock the whole system and structure of a dysfunctional shoulder that will allow for full mobility, pain-free. And that, you know, it's not a magic spot. It's a lot of magic spots and other processes. So I will do an evaluation of range of motion, sensitivity. I'm also going to look at their overall posture. I want to know why. Why is this shoulder having trouble? Are they doing something habitually that is causing this pain? Do they have an underlying perpetuating factor that is wreaking havoc on their body? I had a guy a while back who had a spondylolisthesis, for example, which is where one vertebra shifts forward on another, and you know it's so far out of place that it compromises the nervous system, causes severe pain, numbness, tingling, and eventually, you know, bigger problems and if it's unresolved, paralysis. So he had spondylolisthesis to the fifth degree, which is the most extreme, and he was facing surgery. And yeah, you gotta fix that you can't live with that. And he came to me and he said, can you do anything to help this? And first thing I did was I put him in some gym shorts and I had him stand and we did a standing postural evaluation. And I could just look at him and see that he had a leg that was structurally shorter than the other, that he was standing lopsided. And I said, has anybody ever told you you have a leg length inequality, of a short leg? And he said, yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, when I was in the Dutch Army, they gave me a heel lift. I said, really, have you been wearing that heel lift? And he said, no, I still have it. I don't know where it is, but no, I haven't worn it in years. And as you can imagine, if you're walking around on an unlevel surface, your pelvis is not going to like that. And if your pelvis is not level, your spine cannot curve in the ways it's supposed to curve. So your body compensates, and you do all kinds of things to get your eyes level. And for a while, the first few decades of your life, usually you can handle that pretty well. But after a while, your body can't compensate for that level of dysfunction anymore, and you start to have some severe pain. So he eventually went and had the surgery, which was the appropriate thing for him to do. And then about a year later, and I kept saying, heel lift, because then you're going to be, you know, you're just going to move up your spine, and it's going to be another segment that's going to be in trouble. And eventually his doctor said, hey, you know, you've got a leg length inequality. You ought to put a heel lift in your shoe. And it validated for him, you know, from somebody who has this broad spectrum of knowledge, what I had been saying. And so, you know, he started pursuing that route. So my job is to figure out the underlying reason why. Why is this body having pain? It's a symptom. The pain is a problem, but it's not the problem. What is the problem? And how can I address it? Trigger point therapy is one of the things that I do to address it. I also do more stuff called orthopedic massage therapy, neuromuscular therapy, where I'm treating the whole system, the whole striving to treat the whole neuromuscular skeletal system. And I'm always finding new challenges for which I have to find new tools and new techniques and new resources.
And when you say you're trying to treat the neuromuscular system, what are you trying to do to it? What's normally gone wrong? And
well, oftentimes the nervous system is completely freaked out. It's a, like with fibromyalgia, for example, or other types of chronic severe pain, the nervous system is stuck in fight or flight. It's freaked out. And so one of the first and the most important things that we can do is to calm down the nervous system and say, hey, it's okay. You know, you're not being chased by a tiger here. You are in control of your environment. You can make choices. Nothing is on fire. You're safe. And that's huge. It's profound. Think about a time when even you've had a simple injury. You've turned your ankle or you've thrown your back out and you have to, you know, you don't have time for that. You have to go do something important, for example. Well, we freak out and oh my gosh, I don't have time for this. I've got this class. I've got to go to my job. I've got my kids, and we go to this spaz out place. And the best thing that we can do is stay calm, like our firefighters and our emergency rescuers and our police officers. Their most important job is to stay calm and handle whatever situation comes their way. And we can face all conflict and pain with that same mentality of, oh, wow, this is kind of overwhelming. This is intense. I'm having a lot of sensations that are pretty intense here. Well, I know this is probably only temporary. This is probably as bad as it's going to get. I don't know what's going on, but there are people who do. Let's see, I don't have access to those people at this moment, so what can I do to help myself? Let's see, I can stay calm. I could get a cup of tea. I could breathe. And I can figure out what do I know that would be helpful in this situation? Is there anything that I know that I can do to help myself right now? And move forward with that. For me, I go to trigger point therapy. I go to the trigger point therapy workbook. I go to what I already know and see if I can resolve that or make it better, you know, get a little relief until I'm with somebody who can help me further. So I strive to calm down the nervous system.
How do you do that with massage?
Oh, a really nice technique, and I apologize, I don't know the name of it. A friend of mine, Richard Fenn, taught me this last year. He's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And he didn't make it up, but somebody else did. So imagine I've got a patient laying on a massage table, and I'm sitting down, their face up, and I take their head in my hands, and I'm simply going to cradle their head, and I'm going to tip it backwards into extension, so back like this, really gently, just listening to the body, and then I'm going to rest. And then I'm going to tip it forward just a little bit, listening to their body, and then back, and then I'm going to rest. And I might do that 3 or 4 times, maybe more, maybe less, just listening. And that, it calms down the central nervous system. You'll improve range of motion just doing that. And then I can go to the feet, and I can lift their feet and move them to the left, gently, listening to their body, not taking them into discomfort, bring their feet back to the center, take a breath. Pick their feet back up, go to the right, and back to center. So, one, being present and calm myself, and two, doing these real subtle things to their body, with their body, to help reset and calm the central nervous system. And there's a lot of tools like that. That's not my specialty. I feel like I'm learning that stuff.
Is it known how, say, those head movements, how they calm the nervous system?
It may be. I don't know. I'm sure somebody knows a lot more than what I do about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the most remarkable transformations you've seen of people who thought they were just going to have to live with some pain, and then in the end it was treatable?
I've got a great story about a guy from Pennsylvania who called me. His name was Chris. And this was many years ago, and we scheduled a phone consultation back when I was doing phone consultations. He had a copy of our workbook and wanted to know what to treat. And we were talking on the phone, and he had this pain in his upper back between his shoulder blades. He was a contractor. He built houses for a living, and he'd been in pain for 5 years. He had seen 23 or 22 doctors and physical therapists. And everybody had been treating his back. And he was in so much pain that at one point he stopped working for a year and sat on his couch just trying to rest his way out of it. And at the end of the year he thought, you know what? I'm in pain. It's still the same. I'm just going to go back to work and at least I'll be making a living. So he went back to work. He went to a massage therapist, and the massage therapist was massaging his chest muscles. And he kept saying, the problem is not in my chest. The pain's in my back. The pain is in my back. It's in my rhomboids. So he called me up and he's telling me about his pain. And I said, hey, you got to treat your scalene muscles in your neck because they refer pain to the upper back. And you've got to treat your pec muscles because the rhomboids are probably just overstretched. If the rhomboid has trigger points and that's the right thing to do, then treating your back would have fixed it, you know, 4.5 years ago. It would have been over. It would have been done with the first treatment. But that wasn't helping. And he got really upset with me. He's like, that problem is not in my pecs. You know, it's in my back. And I finally was just like, shut up. Just massage it and call me back in a week. And because my baby was crying and we'd been on the phone for an hour and he wouldn't believe me. I was like, just try it. And it was so funny. But so long story short, he didn't call me back a week later. And I was like, fine, okay. You know, let him hurt. You don't want to know, let him hurt. A month later, he calls me back. And he says, okay, I'm 90% better. I massaged the scalenes. I massaged the pecs. I don't want to come see you. 90% better in a month. He'd been working on himself. So he came to see me. He was missing like the posterior scalene, one of the small muscles in the neck. And he taught me some things that I hadn't done before and how to use the ball on the wall. It was great. It was awesome. And the story with him was he was, I don't know, I think maybe he was in his late 40s. And he had spent his youth bodybuilding, okay, back in the day when we didn't really know about the back. Like, so he was on his own, amateur bodybuilder, young guy, and so he built his mirror muscles, you know, so he looks really great from the front, great chest, great pecs, great arms, but he's rounded. Like, if you look at pictures of bodybuilders from the 70s, they have round shoulders. If you look at bodybuilders now who are working with trainers, they're square. Their shoulders are back here. They've got, you know, they're square. They have back muscles. Well, this guy only had these wonderful, great front muscles, and over time had put all this stress and strain on his rhomboids and middle trapezius and lower trapezius, and they didn't like that, and they caused pain. So he had to loosen all of this mechanically to mechanically reset where his shoulders lived. So he had to soften this with lots and lots of massage, especially to the trigger points, but to the whole muscle, and stretch it out, get the scalenes calmed down, and it made a huge difference.
I think one of the most important messages I took from your book is that the site of pain is not where the problem lies.
That's right. I like to say that the problem is not in the place that hurts. Mm. So now I think of so I made up this statistic, okay? This is what I say right now. This is what I think is true right now. With neuromuscular and myofascial pain, 90% of the time, the problem is not in the place that hurts. That's why treatment fails. So if you're not solving the problem, look somewhere else. What else could this be? What else could be causing pain in this area, either referred or from being overstretched? Here's another concept. So especially with this guy, Chris, his back was crying. The victims cry, the perpetrators don't. The victims cry, the perpetrators don't.
Yeah, that's a very important message. What are some things that people can do at home that will help them with common pain patterns?
They can do a lot of massage on themselves. So a couple things. One, it is possible to massage every single muscle on your own body that a massage therapist could massage on you. Every single muscle you can self-treat. Now you say, I can't reach my back. I can't reach the back of my shoulder. I can't reach the back of my legs. Yes, you can. You can use simple tools like a high bounce ball or a tennis ball. This is a 2.5-inch, 60-millimeter rubber ball. You can have other tools that are softer, like a high bounce pinky, which is a hard foam ball. You can use a lacrosse ball, or like I said, a tennis ball and a sock. The tennis ball is slippery, so we use it against the wall. You use the tennis ball and the sock so it doesn't get away. Or any, like, go to the store and buy dog toys, you know, find different things. Our book, The Trigger Point Therapy Workbook, shows how to self-treat all of these muscles with simple tools like balls against the wall or a roller like a tiger tail or a cane tool like the Theracane or the back knobber to reach your back. And this is important. So let me tell you one more example. So I don't know you very well, Charles, but I'm assuming that you brush your teeth. Is that true?
Yeah.
Yep. So you brush your teeth a couple times a day, a couple, three times a day.
Yep.
If you did it the way your dentist told you, you'd brush your teeth after every meal, and you'd floss, and you'd use mouthwash and all that stuff. But we fundamentally agree that we should take care of our teeth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So at what age did your parents or your caregivers teach you how to brush your teeth?
When I was 3, 4, I guess.
Do you remember this?
No.
No. So as a... not even as a culture, I mean, you live in a whole other country, but we know this now. We know how important it is to take care of our teeth. It's so important that we teach our toddlers how to brush their own teeth, okay? Now, why do we do this? Because we want to keep our teeth. Yeah. We don't want to have black teeth that are falling out and painful, and we don't want to have heart disease and all of the other problems that can start in the mouth with too much bacteria and all kinds of stuff, right? So we brush our teeth. Now, and then we go to the dentist too, right? We go to the dentist. What do you guys do? We do twice a year here usually. So we go to the dentist and they take care of problems, right? They do preventative maintenance and a good deep cleaning, right?
Right.
But they don't come to our house every day to brush our teeth for us, right? We do that for ourselves. I propose that we treat the rest of our bodies the same way. Muscle is on average between 47% to 52% of our body weight, on average. I propose we should learn how to brush our own teeth when it comes to our muscles. So we use simple tools like a ball against the wall. You go to the wall, you put it behind your back, and you roll against the wall, and you can do yourself a lot of good. Try it out. Get a ball, a couple of dollars, put it behind you, massage your back, see what you think, see if it feels better. You can massage most of your body with a $1 or $2 ball against the wall. Now, even better would be to figure out where to treat using an inexpensive book, like the Trigger Point Therapy Workbook, to figure out the where's and the why's. There are other great books coming out about trigger points. So all kinds of good stuff. This is in simple terms for lay people. We took the medical textbooks on trigger points and wrote a version that everybody could read. This is the medical textbook by Trebell and Simons. They're not the last word on trigger points. Still research is coming out. And just like any other topic, I mean, pick a topic. Computers, sales, cars, running, anything. There's like hundreds of books out there. There's just a few books on trigger points. At the moment, I feel like my book is the strongest book on self-treatment and trigger points and massage. But, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was a whole shelf full of books, amazing books on self-treatment and massage and trigger points? Because this stuff is so important, we should all be doing it. We should all be doing it. You get up in the morning with that crick in the neck thing, you know, you can't turn your head, and you say, oh, I don't know what I did, but oh, I must have slept wrong. That's a trigger point. That's a trigger point in your levator scapula muscle. Well, what if you told your partner or your roommate or your friend, hey, come massage that, you know, whatever that's called, that whatever, levator scapula. Come put your, I'll sit here, you come put your elbow right there. Massage that place, massage here. Oh, yeah, so much better. You get a good treatment. We're talking like 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Somebody's massaged there. Maybe they massage the other side a little bit, and you're like, oh, hey, I can move my neck. I have less pain. Not perfect, but better. And by the end of the day, it's over. Maybe you treat it again with a Theracane yourself, maybe you don't. But it's not a 3 or 4 day ordeal. It's muscle pain.
Brilliant. Amber Davis, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much. Can we plug my website?
Absolutely. Where can people find more about you?
So you can learn more about our book at triggerpointbook.com. I also have a website for my business, newdaymyopain.com. Myo means muscle, M-Y-O-P-A-I-N, and you can learn more from either one of those websites.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much, Charles. I appreciate it.